Daniel Jones is a $45 million quarterback. What's going on with the NFL Combine coming up in just a week from now? What is the latest that we're hearing? And what is the cost to the Miami Dolphins as we're coming up about a month away from the legal tampering period? What's the cost to them for having illegally tampered a couple years ago? We're going to talk about all of that. And of course, I don't do it alone because why would I? I've got two of the best in the business. First up, it's senior Pro Football Network NFL analyst Trey Wingo.
Brett, what's up, buddy? How are we?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I always like that phrase, legal tampering, because remember, if it's legal, it's not tampering. And if it's tampering, it's not legal.
Yeah, funny you say that. I have a fun video, I think, that's going to be coming out shortly just on this topic. And I thought of you the entire time I was doing it. The great thing, Trey, is the Super Bowl is over. You and I, we did our recap show last week to discuss it. But that means we're sort of beginning to flip the page towards the NFL draft. And that means each and every week we're going to be joined by Tony Pauline. So let's get Tony in here. What's going on, Tony?
You know, they had to make a name for it, for legal tampering, because it went on at the combine regardless of whether it was legal or illegal. I mean, you have as many agents who descend on Indianapolis for combine week as you do players. And the agents are there to talk to the teams about their respective free agents. So all they did was basically make legal what was well known for years and years and years that took place in Indianapolis.
Guys, are you just going to give away my entire video? It's not even out yet. Can you give me a little bit?
You brought it up. I mean,
I did. You're right. Okay. So. Fair.
We're just responding to the things you put out there.
All right. Well,
but I'm really looking forward to this video. Like, I am psyched.
I'm going to hold you to it because Tony still refuses to follow me on Twitter. So you're the only one who can help me amplify the message there. All right. Now, look, we have a lot of things to talk about from Daniel Jones all the way through to the Miami Dolphins and the NFL Combine. So let's kick it off and let's talk about it. The first topic up is Daniel Jones. There's rumors out there that the Giants would like to work out a long-term deal with him. Some contract numbers are as high as $45 million per year. Trey, I'm going to come to you first. Is Daniel Jones worth that? And should the Giants be spending that? Is he the franchise quarterback?
Daniel Jones is worth whatever someone is willing to pay him. I mean, we always get this. It's kind of hilarious. Oh, he's not worth that. Well, he is if someone's willing to pay him that. And by the way, you know, people are freaking out. Daniel Jones is about to be the poster boy this year for he's getting paid how much crowd, you know,
the Christian Kirk of this year.
Correct. At the end of the day, here are two things that matter. OK, he should shoot for as much money as possible. So like put out 40, have your agent, his new agent, by the way, which they hadn't even started really negotiating with the old agent. So it's not like they're revamping the negotiations. They haven't really started the negotiations. And they have until March 7th to decide whether or not to put the tag on him. So, one, your agents should shoot for as much money as possible. That's their job. Literally, it's their job. Okay? So you may think the numbers are outlandish, and they might be outlandish. But at the end of the day, if you start here, you can still come down to here. But if you start here, you're going down to here. So they should shoot for the moon. The other thing is, Daniel Jones has more leverage than the Giants. Okay, that's just a fact. Because he has shown he can be a functional quarterback. And people are going to look, oh, he only threw 15 touchdown passes. Well, look at the Giants' offensive line. Who in the hell were his receivers? And he stopped the turnovers, which was the most important thing. I mean, literally, I don't think you could pick the Giants' receivers this year out of a lineup, okay? He was throwing to nobodies. I'm not saying he's the greatest thing. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. But here's the other thing that Daniel Jones has going for him. There is no middle tier for quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
You either pay them or they move on. And that's the way it is. And people, you know, people can say, oh, well, we'll put the tag on him and we'll do this and we'll get the picks. Are you sure you're going to get the right quarterback again? Because let's look at Sam Darnold, as my friend Tony Pauline likes to say. Oh, you know, he's bounced around again. Like, how many times have people drafted a quarterback in the first round thinking, got our guy? And now Zach Wilson might be replaced by Derek Carr, Aaron Rodgers for the Jets. Okay, so you know it's really easy when you say all of this to just put it out there that you know well, that's outlandish. But at the end of the day, they have a quarterback they know that they can win with, and it's very similar to me to what happened with Dak Prescott a couple of years ago with the Cowboys. Right, like Dak proved his worth, proved what he could do. And the Cowboys had no choice but to pay him because otherwise they're starting from scratch all over again. Right. And the Giants are very much in the same boat, whether people want to admit it or realize it.
Tony, as we're talking about Daniel Jones, you know, I know you scouted him heavily as he was coming out of college the year in the draft. It was a surprise he went as high as he did at the time. Did you think that he would be in the conversation for a $45, $50 million contract at the time he got drafted at number six by the Giants?
Oh, back in those days, and it wasn't that long ago, who was talking about quarterbacks making $45, $50 million a year? Nobody was, whether it be Daniel Jones, Tom Brady, or whomever. So, I mean, first thing is, everything Trey says is right on the mark. I mean, you got to wonder how much of Daniel Jones' past failures had to do with poor coaching. And now they get a good coach in there, a guy who had a lot of success with Josh Allen, and all of a sudden, Daniel Jones is playing a lot better. I'm here in the eye of the hurricane in the New York area. And when I talked to people back in November, really before Daniel Jones really started to take off and have a good last month and a half of the season, they were talking, yeah, we're going to keep Daniel Jones 2 to 3 years, probably a mid-range contract of $30 million a year. Daniel Jones's play was terrific in December, helps the team get into the playoffs, and now is – agent is shooting for $45 million a year, which he should. Doesn't mean he's going to get it. But as you know, as Trey said, the Giants don't have a lot of don't have any backup plans. What are they going to do? It's not going to be a market where there's a lot of veteran quarterbacks on there. What quarterback are you going to get that's better than Daniel Jones? The New York Giants on paper are less talented than the New York Jets, yet they made it to the second round of the playoffs. That's the thing about coaching with the New York Giants. That's just something that they got. You have some things going on. Need to improve the interior of that offensive line. Need to get more weapons for Daniel Jones. You know, Trey talked about the receivers. Tight ends were basically not very good, and I'm being complimentary with the Giants. So, you know, is he going to get $45 million? No, but I think he's going to get higher than the 2 to 3 year, $30 million a year deal.
Absolutely. That
we bandied about in November, and he deserves it.
Yeah, and look, not to say, you know, we still have to see the impact of whatever decision they make on Saquon Barkley has on this as well. But let's stick on the quarterbacks for a moment.
But by the way, real quickly, just before we move on to the next thing, if you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at the Browns. Okay, right. Be mad at the Browns. Deshaun Watson's cap hit this year is almost $55 million. Yeah,
highest ever, right?
First
ever cap hit over $39
million. $55 million cap hit in the 2023 season. So if you be mad at somebody, always remember, be mad at Cleveland.
Yeah, well, look, that's an evergreen statement if I've ever heard one. But let's stick with the quarterback position. Let's even stick in the New York area. There's been a lot of conversation directly, apparently, according to reports, from the New York Jets that Derek Carr could be seen as the savior for the New York Jets organization if he's to come in and play quarterback for them this upcoming year. I even saw a report that said that the Jets believe if Derek Carr, or they at least said this to him, if he comes in there, they could make him a first ballot Hall of Famer if he wins there. Is Derek Carr the savior for the Jets, Trey? I mean, look, we talk about the Jets probably more than they deserve us to talk about them, but I'm really interested on your thoughts on what's been coming out regarding them and Derek Carr.
Yeah, the savior thing makes no sense to me, right? What is he going to do, baptize them? Like, I mean, you know, what's he going to do? Go around a loincloth and tell them how to live their lives?
Perform an exorcism, I think, is most appropriate for that.
Yeah, franchise. Thank you. That's one for you.
Thank you, sir.
He just needs to he'll be a better quarterback. Okay, he'll be a better quarterback. And they have, you know, Garrett Wilson there now, and they're going to need some more receiver help. And they have, hopefully, Breece Hall comes back and is ready to run the way he did before he tore up his knee. They have weapons. They don't need him to be a savior. They just don't need him to suck. Yeah. Okay? Like, that was their problem. They had sucky quarterback play except for a game and a half from Mike White. A couple of good series from fake Tim Tebow, whatever that guy's name is. I can't remember. Striver Force Agent. Yeah, that guy, whatever. So the Jets – don't need him to be a savior. They just need him to play functional quarterback, and he'll be very good at that. Look, you look at the Raiders' long-term issues since they drafted Derek Carr. None of them really had to do with Derek Carr. They were all on the defensive side. Since 2014, the year they drafted Carr in the second round, I believe they were either 30th, 31st, or 32nd over that time frame in every significant defensive category. So they just need a good defense. Oh, wait, the Jets have a really good defense, and they need someone to function at the quarterback level. He doesn't need to be a savior. He just needs to do what he did with a better team around him.
Yeah, great point. And Tony, look, you're very plugged into the Jets organization. I'm really interested in your thoughts too on Derek. You know, since you've been, you know, focused on the Jets, the quarterback has been the constant for decades, the weak spot on this team. Do you see Derek Carr as somebody who comes in and elevates the Jets to a contender status?
Well, the Jets were contenders last year. And like Trey said, it's going to make them better at the quarterback position. Will he be the savior? Well, Zach Wilson was supposed to be the savior.
Got our guy.
Sam Darnold was supposed to be the savior. That didn't work out.
Got our guy.
There you go. And, you know, it is an improvement over what they have now. In fact, I think that Derek Carr is a better fit for the Jets, is a better choice for the Jets than Aaron Rodgers. But people forget. You know, you talked about the Giants' offensive line being bad. The Jets' offensive line is even worse. I mean, when Joe Douglas came in 2019, the offensive line was terrible, and it's gotten even worse since then. Yeah, the Jets need a quarterback, but they also need 3 to 4 starting offensive linemen. I mean, literally the only legitimate starting offensive line that's coming back is Elijah Vera Tucker, who was a first-round pick 2 years ago, and he's coming off a pectoral injury. Everybody else, I mean, they signed Tomlinson, the guard, last year to a large free agent contract. He was okay. You can't rely on Mekhi Becton, even though I'm hearing good things about Mekhi Becton in his offseason training. He's down to 365 pounds. But this is a cat who's played, what, one half of a football game in the past 2 years? Yeah. You're going to need one, maybe two offensive tackles. You need a center. Depending on what they do with Tucker, they may need a guard. It's not just that they need 3 to 4 offensive linemen. They need 3 to 4 starting offensive linemen. And it's not just getting talented offensive linemen. It's getting those talented offensive linemen to learn to play together, to be a cohesive unit, to learn the system. So Derek Carr is definitely an upgrade at a position the Jets have been trying to upgrade for decades now.
Yeah.
The fact is, the offensive line has gone in reverse since Joe Douglas has gotten here, and that is, no matter who you put back there, if he can't stand upright and he doesn't have time to throw the ball, he's going to get creamed. So it's part of the equation.
The offensive line issues make you really appreciate what Brett Veach was able to do in one offseason in Kansas City. You know, so definitely something to think about there. Look, this is, you know, the season where there's so much quarterback storylines here in this offseason, or as Trey, you call it, player procurement season. Let's continue this trend here. What is the situation right now regarding Lamar Jackson? It doesn't feel like we're getting much clarity on his future. They did hire Todd Monken to come in and be the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, but still nothing has been, you know, intimately said that Lamar's coming back. You know, has there been any clarity on this situation for you, Trey?
No, there really hasn't. And, you know, I think what the Ravens are hoping is that when push comes to shove, it's real easy to say in late February or early March, I'm not playing on the franchise tag. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Well, the exclusive franchise tag is expected to be about $45 million. The non-exclusive is going to be about $32, $33 million. The only guy who really decided to pass on that was Le'Veon Bell. Sat out a year, then got supposedly a big money contract for the Jets, didn't get half the money. So he lost $12 million. That he'll never see again.
Right.
It's easy to say in March and April and even May, I'm not playing on that franchise tag. And then when you get a paycheck of $2 million or more a week and you realize you're going to be losing that, I think the odds are that he'll play on that tag if he wants to. But see, here's a really interesting question. Like, what do the Ravens really want to do?
Right.
Because, you know, are there quarterback needy teams in the NFL? Hell yes, there are. So if Lamar Jackson is able to negotiate with other teams and you get some first round picks in return, I don't know why the Ravens would want to go down that road. Like, if you're going to, I think you have to put the exclusive tag on him and hope that you get a long-term deal worked out, but it never should have come to this in the first place. Like, it never should have gotten here in the first place.
Who do you put that blame on? Do you feel like the organization?
The Browns. Their job? Everything goes back to the Browns. It all goes back to Cleveland. Okay, He's getting $54 million this year.
I would be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to remind everybody that we have produced a long-form documentary on the fans of Cleveland and the perpetual hope and failure that they are saddled with by being fans of the Browns franchise. Trey is just eloquently pointing out that it continues to go on in perpetuity.
I mean, that contract is going to haunt every team trying to negotiate a deal with a quarterback. And if you're Lamar Jackson, who's what? He's only 25, 26?
Yeah.
Like, come on now. You don't think there's a team that would give him everything he wanted to go be their franchise guy for 4 or 5 years in the peak of his ability? You know, the Ravens, I mean, I guess Huntley was an pro bowler this year. Well, he was the 45th alternate for the AFC to make it a quarterback. I mean,
yes.
You know, the Ravens don't have a lot of leverage here. The only leverage they have is slapping the exclusive tag on him.
If they
put him out there, you don't think teams are going to jump at the chance to sign Lamar Jackson? I mean, Deshaun Watson hadn't played for 1,000 days, okay, and had luggage, like Titanic type luggage, okay,
right.
And Lamar has no luggage. He's younger. And he's a better quarterback. Like, there will be teams that will throw whatever they want at him to make sure they get him. So the Ravens better figure this bleep out, or they're going to bleep themselves in the process.
Yeah, well, look, that's definitely the case. And Tony, same sort of question here is, like, you know, the Lamar Jackson situation is maybe not the most talked about because, you know, David Carr's popped up, Daniel Jones' contract, Aaron Rodgers is somewhere in a dark room doing whatever he's doing. Yeah, excuse me, Derek Carr. And so, you know, Lamar Jackson sort of flown under the radar, but this is like, you know, there's a former MVP in his mid-20s on the market, Tony. You know, what happens here? What's going to happen in your
opinion? I asked somebody in the league that, and they said, Lamar Jackson doesn't have an agent. So no one knows how it's going to end up. And that's probably why there's no clarity. That's why it's not talked about. I mean, we just talked about Daniel Jones' agent saying he wants $45 million a year. Who exactly is negotiating for Lamar Jackson? How are they negotiating? Who's talking for Lamar Jackson? So I think the fact that Jackson, I guess, is negotiating on his own slows the process up, you know, may throw some curveballs into the process. You know, if he negotiates with other teams, trying to negotiate and get ready for the season. So I think that's why that's why I was told there's no clarity. My question to people in the league was, what do you think is going to happen with Lamar Jackson? And 90% of the responses I got back were, he doesn't have an agent, so who knows what's going to happen? So that is, you know, a portion of the whole story that people seem to forget about.
I mean, let's just real quickly go down some teams that need quarterbacks, right? We just talked about the Jets, Carolina Panthers, Indianapolis Colts, Atlanta Falcons, San Francisco 49ers, Las Vegas Raiders. That's six just off the top of your head, okay? Yeah. You can't let this guy just go negotiate because there will be someone that will do the Browns thing with him. So
seeing what Shane Steichen was able to do with Jalen Hurts over in Philly, with him now being in Indianapolis, seemingly a quarterback away, that's a very, very interesting pairing given Lamar's skill set over there. So we'll see what happens. And look, we've already talked about three big name quarterbacks and their futures up in the air. There's still one more to talk about. It's Groundhog's Day in player procurement season terms regarding Aaron Rodgers. It's another offseason where his future is in doubt or in question, and he is in probably a groundhog's hole, I would imagine. Is he out now?
I think he's out today.
Has he emerged?
I don't know.
Did he see a shadow? Are we not sure?
He saw a shadow of Davante Adams and went back into hiding.
Bang. There it is. So, yeah, look, what is the situation with Aaron Rodgers, Trey? Like, I know we don't know yet what his future holds, but if you had to guess, are we going to see him be a Green Bay Packer this year?
I don't think so because of the cap problems that happen, and Tony can expound on that a little bit. This year it's manageable, but if he plays this year and doesn't play next year, then it's a disaster. So I think they need to find a way to absorb whatever is going to be the hit this year, get something for him. Because remember, I mean, the Packers, they have a bunch of players that are up. You know, Randall Cobb, Mercedes Lewis, Robert Tonyan, okay, the tight end. And all these are Aaron's guys. These are all Aaron's guys. I mean, the only reason Randall Cobb is there is because Aaron said a couple of years ago, either Randall Cobb signs or I'm not walking through that door. Right. So the Packers need, it's not a facelift. They need to take it down to the studs. Okay. They need to find out what they have with Jordan Love, and they need to surround him with something. And what's the best way to surround him with something? Get something for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tony, have you heard anything on this situation and what the deal is with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah. I spoke to people who know Aaron Rodgers. It's tough to say that they're in Aaron Rodgers' inner circle, because I don't even know that the Cats got an inner circle. Yeah. But people that I spoke with who know Aaron Rodgers and are familiar with him have said they don't feel there's any way he's going back to Green Bay. In fact, one guy who played with Aaron Rodgers told me there was no effing way he's going back to Green Bay. And I think it's a situation where it's probably a mutual divorce, if you will, because the Packers, you know, would be more than happy to get rid of him, or wouldn't mind getting rid of him and getting something in return. And I think Rodgers, who knows what he's going to do? I mean, he's a different sort of person, is ready to move on, whether that's to New York, whether that's to, you know, the Raiders. As I reported from the Senior Bowl, long time before word got out that Devontae, what I said from the Senior Bowl, I learned at the Shrine Game, was that Devontae Adams was basically pitching Aaron Rodgers to come to Vegas, to be the starting quarterback there, to basically hook those two guys up again. You know, but who knows? We're talking about Aaron Rodgers. You don't know. I assume he's going to play one more year to get one more big payday, one more big paycheck, and then take it from there.
Yeah, listen, real quickly, I mean, I just popped in my head. Think about this. Why the quarterback thing is going to be so – it's a thirst trap this offseason for quarterbacks,
Thirst trap.
The entire NFC South needs quarterbacks. Have you ever gone into an offseason where an entire division needs a starting quarterback? Whether it's Carolina, Atlanta, New Orleans, or Tampa Bay. Every single one of those teams needs a quarterback. So we're talking 10, 11 teams that are going to be out there looking for dudes. I mean, it's going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating, you know, situation. And we may just rename player procurement season 2. They got to see what they have in Jordan Love season, because that's seemingly what we say every single year. But okay, look, we're going to move on to our second segment here, because as we said, you know, we are also approaching the NFL draft season. We are a week away from the NFL scouting combine. We have pro days coming up, private workouts, and then, of course, the big stage in Kansas City this year, the NFL draft. But before we do, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that some of this stuff you can bet on over at Caesar Sportsbook. And the great thing about betting at Caesar Sportsbook is they have a great promo for you, exclusively right here at PFN, which is if you bet your first time there, it's risk-free for up to $1,250. That means you can place any bet up to that amount. Win or lose, you will get that entire bet back in betting credits exclusively for use at Caesar Sports. But not only that, they will give you up to 1,000 reward credits and tier credits for use at all Caesar Sports locations. Caesar is the only guys doing this for you. You should be downloading their app and placing your bets there if you're going to do it anywhere. And we've got the promo code for you to do it. It's PFNCZR. Download the Caesar Sportsbook app, enter promo code PFNCZR, and take advantage of that great promo opportunity. Now, as we mentioned, we are going into NFL draft season. Before we talk about some of the college and draft prospects that are out there, there are a couple NFL teams who have been impacted greatly already, and the season hasn't even started yet in terms of the draft, Tony, and that is the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about legal tampering. Well, the Miami Dolphins got hit for illegally tampering, which is like confounding that they give you a chance to do this and you still screw it up. But Miami did, and they were docked a first-round draft pick for it. How costly is that going to be for them?
Massive. I mean, you never want to be without a first-round pick for whatever reason, unless you're getting something of significant value in return. Dolphins didn't do that. The reason it really hurts is this would have been a situation where the Dolphins could have filled a need with an exceptional player. What do I mean? You look at the Dolphins' needs, their two primary needs are running back and cornerback. And there's a very good chance if they had that first pick, which would have been in the early 20s, both of the top running backs in this year's draft, Bijan Robinson of Texas and Jahmyr Gibbs of Alabama, would have been available to them. And you look at Bijan Robinson, I mean, he is a seventh-rated player on my board, but because he plays a non-priority position, he's going to drop in the draft. He is a phenomenal running back. I mean, 25 years ago, Bijan Robinson would have been in the conversation to be the first pick of the draft overall. And he's a phenomenal running back who is an outstanding pass catcher out of the backfield. They line him up the flanks at Texas. They line him up in the slot. He does a great job. He would have come in and immediately fit, if he was available, fit that running back need for the Miami Dolphins and really taken a lot of pressure off of Tua. Jahmyr Gibbs, not as highly rated as Bijan Robinson, but still incredibly talented as a ball carrier, as a blocker, and as a pass catcher out of the backfield for Alabama. A little bit stouter, better short yardage goal line runner, and a guy whose game is on the upswing. You look at the cornerbacks, probably going to have six cornerbacks selected in the first round. The mock draft that I just released on Pro Football Network, I had six cornerbacks. And really what would have happened is Miami in the early 20s would have been right in that area where the fourth or fifth cornerback would have come off the board. So I think it really, really hurts because Miami would have been able to fit a need with best player available had they not had that first round pick basically yanked from them.
Trey, it's pretty interesting, right? When you lose the first round pick and you lost the first round pick because you tried to get Tom Brady to come in and be your quarterback and part owner. None of that is going to happen. Have you ever really seen anything like this in the NFL where a team gets docked for doing something that they didn't even get the benefit of in terms of the illegal activity?
Well, no. I mean, look at Tom Brady just torching all the Florida franchises, right? he leaves the Bucs in tatters and leaves them questioning their situation. He got involved in the Miami. Amazing how none of this really stuck to Tom, which I
find. That's exactly it.
Like, let's not pretend like, oh, I had no idea that any of this was wrong. You know, I mean, that's kind of bogus in every way, shape, or form. So this is why the Dolphins are perpetually. This is why Darius Rucker said the Dolphins make me cry. Okay,
there it is.
And this is why the fan base is the way it is. I mean, their glory days were Super Bowl 7 and 8. Okay, those were the glory days for the Miami Dolphins. We just played Super Bowl 57, and we're headed to 58. It's been a half century of. For the Miami Dolphins, even at a time when they had arguably one of the top five quarterbacks in the history of the NFL and Dan Marino.
Yeah, well,
you know, two things. First of all, it could be worse. You could be the New York Jets. It's even further back than that. You got to remember, we broke that story about Tom Brady and the potential ownership with the Miami Dolphins back on Pro Football Network in a question and answer segment, I believe, in 2019. Brett, you asked the question, have you ever seen a team lose draft picks and basically – not get anything in return, not basically meet their objective. If you go back to the 1990 draft, the Chicago Bears were actually negotiating. The Chicago Bears owned the sixth pick of the draft that year. And this was prior to salary cap football, prior to the hard cap for the rookies, prior to the slotting. And what they were doing before the draft was they were actually negotiating with players. If we select you with the sixth pick, will you accept this contract? And they got docked, I think, a third-round pick and another selection. It wasn't a first-round pick, but they got docked for what was got docked significant punishment back there. And we all laughed. We all thought that they really should have done rather than select a player, they should have, you know, selected Hank Goldberg as their accountant.
Hank Goldberg, wow, throwback.
Whoever the accountant was.
God bless the hammer.
All right, well, look, the Dolphins will not have a first-round pick. 31 other teams will. Most of those teams are going to be looking for a quarterback. And one of the most talked-about quarterbacks and highly rated quarterbacks coming into this draft, especially coming on the heels of the quarterback-less draft of last year, is Alabama quarterback Bryce Young. And one of the big talking points, Tony, about Bryce Young and his candidacy in the draft is his measurements. How is he going to measure at the combine? What are you hearing about that?
Well, I mean, we'll have to wait and see what happens. I mean, the question for Bryce Young is he even going to be 6 foot tall? Is he going to be 190 pounds? When you watch Bryce Young's film, it's amazing. I mean, he gets it between the ears. He's a guy who's clairvoyant on the field. You can tell he knows what's happening and knows what's going to happen before it actually happens. He's very accurate. He does a great job running the offense, but you know, what do you do with a quarterback that's 5'11 and a half, 6 foot tall, 190 pounds, and doesn't have a huge arm? You know, you're going to have to really protect him. You go back to the Tennessee game last year where Alabama lost that game in overtime, and Bryce Young took a beating in that game. I mean, a beating. He was pulling himself up off the ground each and every down. It was, at times, it was painful to watch, but he got back up, got back in the hole, and he got his team into a position to kick the game tying field goal. And I watched that game, and I've said this, you know, time and time again, Bryce Young isn't going to be able to take that beating on a Sunday. Right. I mean, with the beating he took against Tennessee. So, you know, it's a situation where, is he going to be 6 foot tall? Is he going to be 190 pounds? How is he going to hold up at the next level? Great quarterback, but just not a big style guy that's say Lamar Jackson mobile. He's got some mobility, but he's not a true RPO quarterback. So that is going to be a big conversation piece. Remember a couple of years ago, everybody was all glued to see if Kyler Murray was going to be 6 foot tall when it came to combine measurements. A lot of people are going to be watching this year to see what not only the height, but the weight is for one Bryce Young.
Yeah, and I would argue, I think the weight is more significant than the height. I mean, we've seen Drew Brees function at 5'11 and whatever. And, you know, Russell Wilson, not this year's Russell Wilson, Seattle's Russell Wilson, function at a very high level despite not being tall. But, you know, Russell is stocky. I mean, you're right. Like, Bryce looks like Devontae Smith, the wide receiver who went to Alabama and now was in the Super Bowl with the Eagles. You know, they call him the Slim Reaper or the Slim Batman, whatever. Which is cool if you're a wide receiver, but, you know, when players are trying to sack you as a quarterback, I think the weight and the durability, just the frame, okay? Yes. Just the frame alone, it does not look like something – the height thing I think people can get past now. I think we've seen that. Whether it's right or wrong, I think people can get by it. To me, it's the slight frame that is the bigger concern for me if I'm a team thinking about drafting Bryce Young.
Yeah, we'll see. It's been Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud as the two top quarterbacks discussed all season long. The measurements for Bryce Young at the combine could have a significant impact on which one of those guys ultimately gets drafted before the other. Before we get to our position focus of the week, Tony, we'll talk about defensive backs and wide receivers there. I do want to talk about one particular offensive lineman. I'm going to butcher his last name, so make fun of me all you want. Peter Skoronski. Did I get it right?
Nailed it. Nailed it.
All right. Bang. All right. Tony, regarded as one of the top tackles, but yeah, it seems like there's a chance he moves inside to guard, and maybe there's some concern about some of the measurements he may have at the
combine. Yeah, absolutely. Skoronski right now is my number one rated guard. And the reason is this. I've been hearing for months now, when he measures in, he's not going to be 6'4", but more importantly, his arm length may not hit the 33 inch mark. If his arms come in at 32 and a half inches, 32 and three quarters inches, you could forget about him as being a left tackle. And right now, I shouldn't even say right now, for the past 2 or 3 months, people have talked about Skoronski as being a top 10 pick as a left tackle. It's not going to happen if he doesn't have 33 inch arms. So, you know, while everyone will be watching Bryce Young's measurements, a lot of scouts are very interested to see what Skoronski's measurements are, specifically his arm. Like, you want your left tackle to be at least 6'4". They have had some success with left tackles who are shorter, but that arm length is critical. If that arm length is not 33 inches, now you're talking about Skoronski being moved into guard, where his draft value is not as great, maybe being moved to right tackle. He's a terrific offensive lineman. And he's been a terrific offensive lineman for 2 years at left tackle for Northwestern. He's going to be able to play at the next level. But again, if that arm length is not 33 inches, his draft stock's going to take a bit of a hit, because now all of a sudden he's not as appealing as a left tackle.
Yeah, it's one thing to not be 6'4". It's an entirely different thing to not be 6'4" and not have long arms. That's it's going to be challenging. Go ahead, Trey.
Yeah, just saying, he comes from good DNA. His grandfather, Bob Skoronski, was a member of five NFL championship teams for the Packers and Vince Lombardi in the 60s. So you got the gene pool working for you. It's interesting, though, like, you know, Riley Reiff.
In the 60s, you didn't have to be 6'4".
Exactly. Riley Reiff, I think, was the last functional tackle, right, that came out and didn't have the perfect arm length. But the thing I like about Skoronski is, like, you know, remember, he stepped in at Northwestern when Rayshon Slater decided to opt out of the COVID year. And, you know, obviously he's done remarkable things for the Chargers. And Skaronski just slid into that spot and has performed at a very high level. You know, it's funny. Brandon Allen was the quarterback out of Arkansas a few years ago that was so concerned about his hand size. He did hand stretching exercises, and he actually gained somehow a quarter of an inch of hand size by doing this. Is there anything they can do with Skaronski's arms? Is there any sort of stretching we can do to get him to 33 inches to follow the Brandon Allen YouTube method of trying to stretch out your hands? But that is a concern. Like, and that's so much of what the draft has become, especially, Tony, you know this, in the first round. Does he check the boxes, right? Because if it doesn't work out, you want to say, he had all this, okay? And that's why, to me, a lot of times you find players in the second and third round that perform much better and play at a longer, higher level longer than first rounders, because it's more about the tape and not about the measurements. I feel like sometimes the first round of the draft is like, what is the hand size? What's his 40 time? What's his weight? What's his arm strength? What's his shuttle time? And then when you get into the second or third round, you just watch the tape. Geez, this guy really plays well. And it's sort of this, it's a CYA mentality with the draft evaluators and scouts, all the stuff. They want to be able to say, hey, he had all these appropriate things that should have worked for him.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, look, you look no further than recently named Hall of Famer Zach Thomas, dropped all the way to the fifth round out of Texas Tech because he didn't have all of those measurables. He didn't check the boxes, but then you looked at him on tape and he was flying around like a heat-seeking missile. Goes on to have a Hall of Fame career in the NFL. So we'll see how that works out for Skaronski. I'm going to practice that.
Nailed it.
So thank you there. Okay, look, let's get to our position focus of the week. We're going to have these every single week, as we've always done on this show the last 2 years, where we focus on particular positions, especially as we get closer to the combine. And with the combine a week away, Tony, you mentioned you have six defensive backs in your mock draft. The defensive back position is extremely top heavy in this year's draft. A lot of depth at that position. Who's going to come away from the combine at the defensive back position the winner?
Well, I actually have seven defensive backs. What I said is I have six cornerbacks in the first round. Wow. The seventh defensive back is Brian Branch, the safety from Alabama, who I've gone number 13 to the New York Jets. But Deontay Banks of Maryland is not really a household name in the draft Twitter world. But you talk to scouts, and scouts absolutely love this guy. He is a big physical corner. He's athletic. He really showed improvement in 2022. And I think what's going to happen is, coming out of the combine, all of a sudden Twitter draft world is going to light up with Deontay Banks, because I'm told he could break the 4.3 barrier. He could get into the high 4.2s. And here's a guy who's over 6 foot tall. He goes about 205 pounds. He's got the tape to match the speed. He's got the tape to match the athleticism. It's not like he's just a fast guy on the football field. He is a real good football player. I have him going to Jacksonville in my latest mock draft. And, you know, you talk to scouts around the league and they're like, yeah, this guy is a first round prospect. And I think Deontay Banks of Maryland, the cornerback, will further prove that in about a week and a half at the combine, when he runs exceptionally fast and tests well in all the other areas during the defensive back workout at the combine.
Yeah. And on top of defensive backs, you know, wide receiver position, especially in this very pass happy league, that's why both positions on either side of the ball are so important. Is there a wide receiver at the combine we should be keeping our eyes on as a potential winner who could really improve their draft stock come draft day?
Well, not so much a winner, but a guy who I think is going to go in the other direction. And one thing about the combine, you know, the talking points will be about the 40, about the vertical jump. The most important aspects of the combine, I've said this till I'm, you know, blue in the face, is the medicals and the interviews. And those are the things that we don't see on, you know, the NFL Network. Rashee Rice, the receiver out of SMU, is a highly touted receiver. He's coming off a terrific season. But there are issues if you talk to teams who are willing to talk to you about it. He has an injury. I believe it's in his right foot. It's called a sesamoid injury, where it's an inflammation by the big toe, and teams are concerned that it's a chronic issue. And the way you get rid of this issue is through rest. So if that pops up during combine medicals, that's going to be a big red flag on Rice. The other thing is, he's got some significant off the field issues, including one which occurred with a former basketball player at SMU, which teams are aware of. You go through some mock drafts, and people like Rashee Rice is a potential late first-round pick, early second-round pick. Talking to people, there is a real chance that Rashee Rice falls out of the top of 100 and ends up as a day three pick because of the issues that we won't see at the 40, we won't see at the vertical jump, at the combine, the medicals and the interviews, which are critical to these guys when they land in Indianapolis.
It feels like every
Tony, that's so smart. Sorry, Brett, just want to say that's so important because we just talked about the job that Brett Veach did with the Chiefs, the GM rebuilding that offensive line. One of those rebuilt tools was Trey Smith, the offensive lineman out of Tennessee. He fell to the sixth round because they saw some medical thing with his heart that scared a lot of people away. And it turned out it wasn't that big of a deal. And he is an absolute mauler on that line for Kansas City. I mean, not only great in the running game, but extremely well in the in pass blocking as well. And the only reason he was available to the Chiefs in the sixth round, they were looking at him as a late first rounder, early second rounder at worst when he came out a few years ago, is because of the medical. So that's 100% right what Tony is saying. More often than not, when somebody falls in the draft, it's not because of something that happened that we see at the combine. It's something that happened that we didn't see at the combine, and it's usually medical or it's something in those interviews.
Yeah, and you know, Trey, actually, you joined us last year during our live draft show that Tony and I did together, in which you know, Tony, make sure you stock up on cough drops this year. But you know, every year we sit there and we watch a player who has received an incredible amount of publicity given the talents and raw skills they bring to the game of football, and we've seen them slide for one reason or another, usually related to medicals or off the field concerns. So every year there's a player or two we see this happen to, and we'll see if that is the case with this particular player. As well, we're going to get to our third segment here, and we're going to be joined by Pro Football Network NFL draft analyst Ian Cummings, who's going to reveal Pro Football Network's consensus big board, first one that we're releasing during draft season. Ian's going to join us to break it all down. But before we do, we are entering draft season, which means we're entering the new league year. That means it's best ball season for fantasy already, if you can believe it. And at Underdog Fantasy, best ball is already underway. Make sure you're getting in your early entries. With Underdog, you will have the opportunity to spice up your fantasy football season and take the higher or lower on any offensive player stat projection and get up to a $100 deposit bonus when you use promo code PFN at sign up. And that promo code is also good for all of those early best ball entries you may also find yourself doing. So if you're going to play best ball at Underdog, and you should, make sure you use promo code PFN. Okay, now for our third segment, we're going to talk about the Pro Football Network consensus big board. Let's bring in NFL draft analyst for Pro Football Network, Ian Cummings. Ian, what's up, man?
Nothing much, guys. How we doing?
Good. It's nice to see you awake and alert.
Yeah, I was wondering how long it was going to take someone to bring that up. Matt's probably in the background, like, hey.
Is there something we need to know about it? Is this narcolepsy here? What's going on?
No. What it was, if people don't know the story, all right, it was finals at school, and I had an accounting midterm the day after, and I suck at accounting. I'm terrible at it, right? So I'm studying at 3 a.m. before the draft, trying to get it. We passed the accounting test, but by the time the draft hit, man, I was not doing it. And then I woke up the next morning, I was panicking. Oh my God, like, how could you fall asleep? It all worked out, but Matt is holding it over my head, and deservedly so.
It's something that it's part of the everlasting lore here at Pro Football Network. Ian's our NFL draft analyst sleeping through the NFL draft, but that's okay because Ian does incredible work for us.
I didn't expect it. NFL draft analyst sleeping during the NFL draft. Like, this is your Super Bowl, man. Like, come on. I can't explain it. I can't make excuses. I just, you know, you move on eventually. Matt's going to hold it over my head for the next decade or century or whatever.
Ian, I just want to know, did you pass your accounting final?
I did. Yes. I had to, man. I mean, it was one of those things where I was just like, if I have to retake accounting, like, are you kidding me? Like, no, I can't go through 9 more weeks of this. Like, come on now.
Ian, last year you and I got together at the combine and we sat down and you walked me through your scouting process and your time, you know, in this industry as a draft analyst and draft scout. It was incredibly insightful for me. I hope everybody goes and checks it out at the Pro Football Network YouTube channel. You'll be able to see a lot of that stuff and how we approach the NFL draft. So, Ian, get us started. Talk to us about the PFN consensus big board. What do we need to know about where we are rating these players here at Pro Football Network?
Yeah, I guess just a broad overview to start, right? It's still, you know, the process is not completed yet, right? So I think the most important thing for me through every step of the way is remaining flexible. Now, there's a fine balance to strike because you don't want to be moving every little thing based on every little detail. I think the NFL Combine is a dangerous time for that. You see a fast time, and you're like, oh, I got to move that guy up. Oh, I got to move this guy down, right? Usually, by the time the NFL Combine hits, which is when we're releasing our big board, you should know, you should have a general expectation of how guys are going to test, you know, what range they're going to test, how athletic they are. It's more for cross-checking, right? But to this point, we've gone through a lot of tape and we've got a pecking order, right? I think the key is remaining flexible, but this big board is a, you know, it's a product of months and months of hard work. And, you know, the Shrine Bowl was another great glimpse at, you know, prospects up close. And me and Tony got to talk to them in interviews and you learn so much more there as well. So it's a lot of information. It's very information intensive, but it's rewarding. And we're at the point where we've got that pecking order and we can start to break it down.
That's great. So, all right. So talk to us, like, give us the top five here. Who do we need to know? What are the names we need to be keeping our eye on for this NFL draft?
Yeah, well, I think early on, Jalen Carter and Will Anderson, those are definitely going to be the top two names that come off the board that you're hearing about. I think those are the two guys who are most often regarded as the blue chip guys, right? You know, Jalen Carter, defensive tackle from Georgia, Anderson from Alabama. But you got Bryce Young and CJ Stroud up there, too. And those are guys who are commonly referred to as the top quarterbacks in this class. You know, I think it's going to be a fun discussion for them and Levis and Richardson down the line. But you look at Stroud, his pocket operation ability, and then Bryce Young. The size question is going to be big, and that's something that we'll get answers for at the NFL Combine. But looking for a quarterback, if you're looking for a franchise guy, the guy who has the it factor, who's very controlled in chaotic situations, Bryce Young is the guy who fits that description the most for me. So you got your top two quarterbacks, you got your blue chip guys, and you got Miles Murphy at Clemson, who's another phenomenal player. You know, he's that 6'5", 275 power rusher. You know, he's really amped up, but he's got great hands, you know, great pop in his hands, and he's got some nice bend too, you know, kind of underrated aspect of his game. So those are the guys that are at the top, but there's a lot of quality talent up there.
So
just real quickly, Brett, if you don't mind me jumping in here real quick. Last year, we only had one quarterback go in the first round, obviously Kenny Pickett. And his tiny hands went to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's worked out okay. I think they're going to try and build a franchise around him now. What are we thinking? Four potential quarterbacks in the first round?
I think they should all go in the first round. Yeah, I in my opinion, honestly, I know there's, you know, people are kind of, you know, Anthony Richardson is the most polarizing one by far, and we've seen that coming up here. But, you know, in my opinion, you do at a certain point, you do bank on the tools, because 3 to 4 years down the line, he could really be a phenomenal player for you if you put him in the right situation, right? So at a certain point, it's worth getting him locked down with that fifth year option. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. You know, you got some people who are saying a guy with that amount of tools isn't going to get out of the top 10. You've got other people saying, you know, that he is going to fall a little bit, maybe get down to, you know, where the Buccaneers are or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think ultimately all four of them should go in round one. And it's head and shoulders a better quarterback class than we saw last year. I mean, I remember Kenny Pickett came away with a day two grade for me, and he was my QB1, right? So that just kind of tells you everything you need to know. This one is a lot deeper at the top.
When you say all four, just to be clear, the fourth guy we're talking about is Will Levis. He's not ranked fourth of your four quarterbacks, but Will Levis is that other first-round guy, Ian?
Yeah, it's Will Levis and Anthony Richardson. They're a little bit lower for most people, and then you got CJ Stroud and Bryce Young at the top.
Well, if we're talking about things that should flag somebody, Will Levis puts mayonnaise in his coffee.
Yeah, that's a red flag right there.
That's a serial killer move.
I mean, the banana with the peel on too. I mean, this guy is just like, he's just trying. He's asking NFL teams to remove them from their draft.
Mayonnaise in your coffee.
I gotta say, I haven't tried it before. I don't.
And I'm not going to.
I'm not encouraged to try it either. But you know,
sounds like punishment.
Honestly.
It sounds like it's a punishment for losing, coming last in your fantasy draft. That's what that sounds like. You must eat a banana with a peel on it and put mayonnaise in your coffee.
We'll have to keep that in mind for the PFN Fantasy League this year. Ian, talk to us about a guy who, throughout the course of putting the big board together, probably is a very surprising riser, someone who's rising up the PFN consensus big board that we should have our eye on. Maybe not a first-round pick, but somebody who's really elevated their status.
I think he could definitely be a first-round pick. In fact, I think after he tests, it's likely, right? And you never want to speak in absolutes in the NFL draft. But, I mean, just looking at the upside this guy has, Lucas Van Ness out of Iowa, he's a guy who, you know, I ran his numbers late in the process, and he graded out very high for me. Get him in the big board, and he's rising quick. Definitely a little raw on the hand usage aspect, right? You know, he's very power dominant right now.
Get him a trainer.
Yeah, kind of similar. Exactly. Got to get him on the phone, Brett. But, you know, he's kind of similar to Miles Murphy, you know, from a profile standpoint, when you look at, you know, how big he is, how long he is. But one thing that kind of gives me solace with Van Ness, right, he's a little raw on the hand usage side, but he's explosive. He's got enough hip flexibility to roll the corner. And I love how naturally he acquires leverage and lowers his pads and loads his hips into his power rushes, right? Because with a guy who's 6'5", sometimes you worry about how they, you know, how low can you get and how can you sustain that? And he's so good at sustaining it through reps and getting under guys for his size. That's something to me that's sustainable. You can build off of that with your hand usage down the line. So I'm a big fan of the upside. He proved he could be alignment versatile. And I think he's really going to open some eyes with his testing too with the NFL Combine.
Okay, before we close out here, just give us a quick understanding of how the consensus big board is put together, because this isn't just your big board. There's multiple NFL draft analysts here at Pro Football Network. How does this big board come together when we call it the consensus big board?
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty much what it sounds like. You got me, Tony, Cam, you know, we just kind of put our heads together and it's basically averaging the numbers out, right? You know, you submit it and you get averages and you get the pecking order from there, and that's how it goes. It's a pretty simple process. I think the more complicated part is getting to that point where you have your own big board. I know I was stressing about it in the days leading up to it, like, oh, should I have this guy here? Like, should I reevaluate this one real quick, right? So, you know, I think the hardest part is cross-checking. Once you get those, your individual top 300 board, you know, it's really easy to kind of compile it all together and get the averages. But that's how it works. You know, it's really just all three of us doing our own work, you know, and then convening and getting those numbers ready and then stacking it up the way it is.
So it's like accounting.
Basically. Yeah, unfortunately. Thanks for making me think about it like that, Trey. Now I'm never going to be able to make a big board again, I swear.
Well, all right. Look, Ian, we're looking forward to hearing more from you throughout draft season as we get closer to the NFL draft. Every couple of weeks, the consensus big board will go through some updates. And when it does, we look forward to you letting us know and our audience know what those updates are. Ian, Tony, great to have you here every single week moving forward. Excited to get the band back together. Trey, as always, great to be here every single week. We will see you guys next week. As we start to get closer and closer to not just the NFL Combine, we'll be in the midst of NFL Combine week next week, Thursday, with player workouts having already begun. And then we will get closer and closer to pro days and everything else that comes along with the NFL draft. We'll be with you every step of the way. We'll see you next week.